when the political system is dominated by men, like in Africa, they will use violence as a mean to resolve their disagreement. So including women will lead to lower conflict.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. In this program, how more women in Africa's labor force could mean more peaceful elections.
I'm Rasman Widraugo, economist in the African Department and desk on Central African Republic.
While elections are one of the most important pillars of democracy, in many African countries they are characterized by uncertainties due to the high risk of electoral violence. Studies often look at ethnic tensions and political cleavages as drivers of electoral violence, but how might gender play into this? IMF economist Rasman Widraugo investigated the impact of gender equality on electoral violence in Africa and found yet another good reason to increase female labor force participation.
So, would more women in Africa's workforce mean less conflict?
Yes, I really trust that more women in the workforce mean less conflict.
And why do you think? What is it about the women that reduces the level of violence or conflict?
The argument is that a society dominated and controlled by men are subject to an environment where violence and domination are considered as normal.
Right.
And therefore, society with high level of maldominance in politics can probably fuel conflict. And given that on average, women have more peaceful preference compared to men, including women, the decision, the political decision making or the societal decision making, they will exert the inherent pacific influence that they have and contribute to adopt more peaceful preference. And by preference, I mean, for example, Laos and the country.
So what prompted you to look into this topic? And why did you, I noticed that you're very much focused on electoral violence. So what
Yes.
prompted you to look into the topic? And why did you focus on electoral violence in particular?
The reason is that nearly 50% of elections in Africa end up in violence. And there will be 13 elections between end of this year and next year in Africa.
So this is important research then?
Yes, it is important and timely because we are showing that in countries where there are more women in the labor market, this country may expect lower electoral violence.
And so what kind of data did you use for this research? And do you think that the data, because data in Africa is not always easily available, are you confident that the data truly reflects people's experiences in African countries?
It is true that there are some data problems in Africa, and we use micro-level, individual-level data from Afrobarometer surveys. Afrobarometer is an independent research project that collects data on the social and economic conditions in Africa. We strongly believe that the data or the indicator of electoral violence that we use in the paper reflect people's experience. So we use two questions in the surveys. We first ask, during election campaign in this country, how much do you personally see becoming a victim of political intimidation or violence? And as you may expect, the answer to such a question will be based on your previous experience.
Mm-hmm.
If you have experienced electoral violence in the past, you will probably say yes. You will probably expect electoral violence in the future. And the second question that we use to measure electoral violence ask, in your opinion, how often voters are threatened with violence at the polls in this country's election?
Mm.
And again, you can see clearly that response to such a question will depend on your previous experience. Although we say in the paper that it reflects the perception of electoral violence, we can also at the same time say that it reflects the experience of electoral violence of people and the continent.
And so how many people have experienced some form of electoral violence, according to this data then?
According to the data that we use, out of a sample of more than 40,000 people, nearly 50% of people say that they experience it.
Almost half of the people in the sample have experienced some form of violence during an election.
Yes. And this is close to what one study also found at the country level.
So I noticed in your research that you use rainfall as a form of a benchmark to measure both female labor force participation and incidents of violence. What is it about rainfall that allows you to do that?
Contrary to other regions in the world, the agriculture sector remains the main source of employment in Africa. And women are the main labor force in the agriculture sector. They account for more than 50%.
So women account for more than 50% in the...
agriculture sector.
Wow.
And so we will expect naturally that a shock in rainfall or a significant decline in the rainfall will affect their jobs. And the link to conflict is that there have been several studies that have shown that an economic fluctuation coming from, for example, an extreme decline in rainfall can lead to conflict. Because we can see in the Sahel, for example, with low level of rainfall leading to low level of agricultural production. Level of poverty is very high in this region. And it is easier for the rebels group to recruit young people there because most of them are suffering from poverty. And this is how rainfall, low level of rainfall can fuel conflict. So we are using it here to as a benchmark on the relationship between women labor force participation and electoral violence.
So how do you distinguish between, you know, reduction in violence or reduction in conflict due to favorable agricultural conditions, like more rainfall, and a reduction in conflict or violence due to a higher female labor force participation?
It is true that it is difficult to identify a causal effect due to the fact that an improvement in the agriculture production can lead to a low level of conflict or violence. But in this paper, we try as much as possible to make sure that the estimated lower level of electoral violence is due to the inclusion of women in the labor market. And we do that by taking into account the potential impact of agricultural production on the conflict or on violence. And by also taking into account other factors, it is not only agricultural production, it can be, for example, quality of institution, it can be the supervision of election, it can be the fact that there are some ethnic tensions or religious tensions that can also affect electoral violence. But we are able to take into account all these potential effects in the paper, and we identify the impact of women labor force participation on electoral violence. And we believe that the result that we are getting, I mean, the low level of electoral violence is due to the inclusion of women in the labor market.
So you refer to structural inequality throughout this report. What do you mean by structural inequality, and how does that relate to conflict?
A structural inequality refers to a system of privilege or inequality created and maintained by interlocking societal institutions. It is a very complex concept, but let me give you an idea of structural gender inequality. The first can be, for example, the Me Too movement.
The Me Too movement?
Yes. It started in 2017. And before 2017, women have been subject to some kind of violence, harassment, assault. But we couldn't talk about it because it was kind of a norm in the society. It was kind of tolerated. So we couldn't get justice about the terrible things that we are subject to. And this is structural because we cannot talk about it publicly because we fear about retaliation on their own life or their business. And the fact that, I mean, society does not really consider it as a problem. It was not considered as a problem. Don't see what kind of tolerated.
So do you think that the level of structural inequality in African countries is higher than it is perhaps in other regions?
Yes, I believe that the level of structural inequality in Africa is higher. And this start also at the beginning. Because most people, particularly in the rural area, still believe that women are inferior. So they will send their boys to school, but not their girls. And the structural inequality that we create from the beginning will lead to high level of inequality when these kids grow up. Because the boy who goes to school will get a better job, while the girl who doesn't go to school will end up with no paid job or less paid job. And this is how it starts. And in Africa, a lot of people still think that women are inferior. And when you accept at home that women are inferior, you will also accept outside that it is quite normal to consider that some ethnic groups or some political parties are inferior. And there are a lot of studies showing that this kind of transient lead quickly to conflict.
So but how high do you think on the priority list should addressing gender equality be in terms of African development?
Yeah, this is a very good question because there should not be a trade-off between addressing gender inequality and other development priorities. Government should not allow any unequal treatment to women or unequal access to opportunity between men and women. Achieving, for example, great development priorities can be done while also addressing gender inequality. If a government went to increase public investment, one question is whether all people, both men and women, are benefiting from this public investment. And ensuring that men and women have the same level of opportunity can lead to higher economic growth, better quality of institutions, and this is also related to lower conflict or violence. So I don't believe there should be a trade-off between addressing gender inequality and other development priorities. African countries should try as much as possible to guarantee an equal level of opportunity to both men and women.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Rasman Ouedraogo and Idrissa Ouedraogo are co-authors of Gender Equality and Electoral Violence in Africa, Unlocking the Peacemaking Potential of Women. You can find the paper at imf.org. And if you like this podcast, look for us on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.